Welcome back to the introduction to modern cryptography. And the last thing that we talked about last week was the Lampert signature scheme. But before that, we finalized all the comments, all the ideas that we wanted to see about authenticated encryption with associated data. Then we had a quick overview of our symmetric cryptography concepts that we want to translate into asymmetric cryptographic concepts. And the first concept that we started with was identifying an asymmetric variant of message authentication codes, and this is digital signatures. And the first digital signature scheme that we saw, at least as a very brief sketch, was the Lampert signature scheme. And I begin with writing down the more formal specification of this construction. So, first of all, we let the message space of signatures of messages that want to be signed be the set of all bit strings of length L. Then the gen algorithm starts with a loop of L steps, and for every I in L, we compute values xi0 by sampling from the input space of our one-way function. And we do the same for xi1, also sampled from the set x of the input space of our one-way function. And we compute the outputs, which are yi0, which is f of xi0, and we compute yi1, which is the output of our one-way function on input of xi1. Now the secret key, the secret signing key, is the vector of all x10, x11, and so on to xl0, xl1. And the verification key is just the same, only that here we store only the outputs of the one-way function. So y10, y11, and so on to yl0 and yl1. And lastly, we return the key pair that consists of the signing key and the verification key. The sign algorithm takes as input the secret signing key and the message to be signed. And it starts with parsing the signing key as x10 to and x11 to xl0, xl1. And then we also pass our message as its bit string, such that every output bit here is actually really a bit. And the signature is then just the string of all signing key elements x1m1 to xlml. And we return the signature. So before repeating the intuition behind that, we first write down the verify algorithm that takes as input the verification key, the message key, and the signature. And for this, we start parsing our verification key as y10, y11, up to yl0, yl1. We do the same for the message, just this time all the elements are bits. And we do the same for the signature. And in this case, these elements are input values, pre-images of our one-way function. Now for all I in L, we want that if one of the images of the signature does not equal the images stored in our verification key, then this signature is rejected. Otherwise, the signature is accepted and we output one. From one. Yes.
Sigma 1 or O 1?
Sigma 1 to Sigma L.
Okay.
Thank you, too. Okay, so what happens here? We sample input elements to a one-way function, so pre-images to a one-way function. In total, L times two pre-images. One list of pre-images for message bits with zero, and one list of pre-image elements for message input bits with one. So we have these two lists here. They are merged. But the idea is we have x10 to xl0 and x11 to xl1, and all of them are randomly sampled, and the verification key just consists with the images of these pre-images. So again, L times two output elements of the one-way function. Now the signing algorithm is super simple. We just pass our messages to consider each individual bit, and we select the elements from our signing key. We select the elements from our signing key by looking at each bit. So for the first message bit, we either choose x10 or x11. If the first message bit is 0, we choose x10. If the first message bit is 1, we choose x11. And we continue to do that for all the message bits of our message. So we basically reveal in our signature one half of our pre-images. Okay. Now, the verification algorithm parses the verification key. These are the outputs of the one-way function. We pass the message as its message bits, and we pass the signature as the input values, as the input elements of our one-way function, and then we check if using the input values of our one-way function taken from the signature, if when we evaluate them with the one-way function, if we get back the output values that we stored in the verification key for each message bit individually. This should be clear. Is there any question about that? So what are the... Yeah, please. Question. At the level of the for. So I first verify, so I go through all the bits of the message, so for every bit of the message, and then for every bit of the message I check if the input value of the one-way function that I got from the signature equals the output value of the one-way function that I stored in the verification key for the message bit of the message. And if this does not equal, then I reject the signature, because then the signature is not valid. Otherwise, if all of these checks were successful, I eventually return one because I accept the signature. What are the big disadvantages of the Lamport signature scheme? Yes, please. We have pretty big keys. We have one input slash output element of a one-way function per message bit that we want to sign. So if our messages are of 128 bits, then we have to have 128 one-way function input values in the signature in the signing key and 128 output values of a one-way function in the verification key. So if our one-way function also offers 128 bits of security, then we basically have signing key and verification key of 128 times 128 bits. This is not good. Also, our signature is pretty large. It's actually the same size. It's actually twice as much. So it's 128 times 128 times 2. For a signing key and verification key if the input and output space are of the same size. And our signature is just half of that because we just reveal half of the input values from our signing key. Another disadvantage.
It is computationally expensive. You need to compute a one-way function for each bit of the message.
Yeah. One-way functions are pretty cheap. But yeah, true.
Not on the scale of bits.
Yeah. It is depends on what easy means. We will talk about this in a couple of seconds. So let's talk about the parameters. So signing key. What we can actually do for generating the signing key is we can sample a key of a pseudorandom function, and then we can compute the inputs to our one-way function by evaluating the pseudorandom function with the PRF key and the index of our element and the bit for which our element is used, bit 0 or bit 1. For all I in L, parameters, let's call it parameters and improvements. So This improvement here scales the signing key down from 2 times L pre-images to 1 PRF key. Okay, so signing key size is not a big problem anymore. We can compute the input values to the one-way function dynamically. Verification key. One option to reduce the size of the verification key is to trade it with the size of the signature. So instead of having 2 times L output values of the one-way function, we can just hash all of them and basically commit to them. So instead of doing that, we commit to full verification key. So VK star or prime is basically the hash of Y10, Y11, and so on up to YL0 and YL1. The problem is then that the signature gets larger. So now the signature consists just as before of the relevant input values of the one-way function. X1M1 to XLML. But now we have to tell the receiver, the verifier, what the actual verification key was to check if the commitment is correct. So we have to reveal the full verification key in the signature. So we can either have a short verification key and a long signature, or we can have slightly shorter but still long signature and long verification key. This is just a simple trick, doesn't really help us a lot. So summary of that is that the verification checks the one-way function evaluation plus the consistency with the verification key. And this leads to compact verification key prime and longer signature. Finally, for the signature, certain one-way functions allow for aggregation. So basically, the signature can be aggregated by taking something like the sum of all input values of the one-way function XIMI, And then one can also aggregate the relevant parts of the verification key by computing y star as the product of all relevant output values of the one-way function yimi. And then for verification, we just check if the signature applied on the one-way function equals the computed output y star. So with that aggregation, we at least reduce the signature size from multiple elements down to a single element. And we didn't talk about the discrete logarithm yet, but there are versions of one-way functions, for example, the discrete logarithm, with which we can build the Lamport signature scheme in a way such that the elements and the signature can be compressed and aggregated to a compact element. So the idea here is that we can basically obtain a compact pre-image in the signature, but the big problem is one of the motivations that we have had last week is that we have one-way functions for which we believe that they are secure against against quantum adversaries, but we don't have a one-way function that offers for this type of aggregation and is also post-quantum secure. So there is no, at least at the moment, we don't know of any post-quantum one-way function with aggregation. Okay, so doesn't look super terrible, but also doesn't look super helpful. So we now have a signing key that is compact. We can trade parts of the verification key with the length of the signature, just moves the problem from one side to another. And we can, for some one-way functions, have aggregation such that signatures are short. But if we want to achieve this compact variant of signatures, we seemingly don't get post-quantum security anymore. Okay, not super good. No post-quantum one-way function with aggregation known. Yes. Without would be another O after the slash. Security. The question is, do we achieve full unforgeability under chosen message attacks? And we have heard something like, no. What is the reason for that? What is the simplest attack against one forgeability of chosen message attacks?
Get a signature for the all zero message and for the all one message, and then you can pick your bits from that for any other message.
Okay, so the attack is we first query for a signature of the all zero string, so we call the sign oracle on input of the all zero message. Then we do the same for the all one message, which means that we call the sign oracle and now our signing key is basically the signature of all zeros and the signature of all ones. Which means we can sign without oracles. But is there any form of security that we achieve? If yes, what type of security can we achieve here? So we call this not no chosen message attacks, but what we call it is one unforgeability under chosen message attacks, because what we allow the attacker to do is to do one query. So one query is permitted to Oracle. Sign. And then still no forgery. Should be possible due to that. So of course, if we have seen the signature for one particular message, then we know that signature for that message. But as soon as we would like, and this, you will have the sketch, I will write that down. Proof sketch is left as an exercise. But the intuition is that as soon as the attacker wants to produce a forgery for a message that differs from the message queried once to the sign oracle here, then the attacker does not know the pre-image of the one-way function for the bit in which the message that the adversary wants to forge a signature for differs from the message that the attacker saw the signature for. So there is, if the attacker wants to be successful, the attacker has to produce a signature for a message that differs from the message that was queried in the sign oracle. And that means that there is at least one bit where these two messages differ. And in that particular bit, the attacker didn't see the pre-image of the one-way function that is stored in the signing key and in the signature. For that reason, producing a valid forgery means that the adversary was able to break the one-way function for that particular bit in which the message that the adversary produces a forgery for differs from the one that the adversary saw the signature in as output of the sign oracle. I guess this intuition is roughly clear, but looks as if this is very useless. So if you first have to publish a verification key just to produce a single signature that is then verified later and then you have to update your verification key again, doesn't look very useful. So how can we make this thing useful? This is the question that we considered now. So from one time, and this is what we call this thing, a one-time signature. To practice. So the first obvious solution is that we have a stateful signature. So we basically have Q key, Q pairs, Q P key pairs. Or a chain of signatures with continuous key generation. With continuous key generation. So one option is I just publish a long list of verification keys, and whenever I publish a signature, I tell you which verification key should be used for verifying it. Or I start with one key pair, and whenever I sign, I both sign the message and I generate a fresh key pair and also sign the fresh verification key. So I basically have a chain of key pairs such that the first signing key pair also signs its own message, but also the next verification key. So as the receiver, I have to continuously verify all verification keys one after another. In either case, the signing key must be stateful, either to remember which keys were used already, or to update the signing key. And in the latter case, this leads to continuous verification. Okay, so can be practical. There are situations where I have a continuous communication with somebody else. So instead of just publishing a fixed signing key forever, I can just regenerate fresh signing keys and regenerate fresh verification keys, and I just sign my messages and my verification key with every update. It's okay. It's only problematic when I want to have something stateless also for the verifiers. So if they don't want to trace which verification keys are the currently useful ones or the current relevant ones, and they don't want to first verify a chain of signatures before they end up in the current signature, then this type of statefulness is not useful. An alternative is something that reminds us to a construction idea that we have seen a couple of weeks ago, namely the GGM-based key tree. Who remembers what GGM was? Goldreich Goldwassermikali. Who remembers what that was? Very good. Do you remember how it worked, roughly?
associated data is generated by the, I mean, we had two PLGs, and according to the associated data, the PLGs were
So what we roughly have, very good recollection from what we have seen a couple of weeks ago. So pseudorandom generator does not have an associated data input, but we want to have a form of associated data for a pseudorandom function. Now we assume that we have a pseudorandom generator that doubles the output size from the input size. So we have an input key of length L, and the pseudorandom generator produces an output key of length 2 times L. And now we build a tree. And in order to get the output of the pseudorandom function on input of the key and an associated data string of 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, and 1 at the end, we basically go down a tree. For the first bit, 0, we either choose left or right. For the first bit, 0, we go left. Then we do the same thing again. We have the pseudorandom generator. The input of the pseudorandom generator is the key, the left output of the first invocation of the first pseudorandom generator invocation. We again call the pseudorandom generator. The output are 2 bit strings. And depending on what the associated data bit string bits in the second position is, we either again go left or right. And we continue to do that until we reach the leaf level. And the leaf level output is the output of our pseudorandom function. And we use something very similar for making Lamport signatures useful in practice. So we start with a root signing key verification key. Tree. Baum. GGM-based key tree. So we start with the root. And depending on whether our message starts with a 0-bit or a 1-bit, we go left or right. We continue to do that until we reach the end of the message. Whenever the next bit is a 0, we go left. Whenever the next bit is a 1, we go right. And then at the leaf level, we have a signing key for the old zero string and a verification key for the old zero string. And we have a signing key for the old zero string except for the last bit. And a verification key for that. We can do the same thing on the left side. So here we have a signing key for the old one string, except for the last bit, and a corresponding verification key. And we have a signing key for the old one string. It's not yet entirely clear how this tree is built. We will talk about that in a second. But the interesting part is we can generate from the initial signing key signing keys at this bottom level. And so our entire signing key does not need to pre-compute all of that. But we can dynamically generate paths on this tree. On this intuitive level, the hash of the message that we want to sign determines the path to the leaf in that tree. Then we sign the hash of the message with the leaf signing key SKH of M. And then the third step is that the full signature consists of the signature of HM with the signing key for HM, as well as all verification keys on the path to the root. Let's make this slightly more concretely, and we will even go one level deeper into concreteness, but first of all, still visual. So, the signing key is this initial signing key, or the signing key that we need to store is some initial signing key, and we will write down how it is computed in a second. And we have some verification key, and this verification key is just a meta verification key that consists of more information. First of all, it consists of some verification key VK prime. Then it consists of VK 0 prime and VK 1 prime. And then it consists of the one-time signature using SK prime to sign the hash of VK0 prime and VK1 prime. So there are a couple of keys that I mentioned here. I didn't describe where they come from, but I will do that in a second. So again, we have our tree. And our tree on the left side consists of SK1 and VK1, where VK1 is VK1 prime, VK1 1 0 prime, VK 1 1 prime, and again the one time signature under SK 1 prime of the hash of VK 1 0 prime and VK 1 1 prime. On the left side, we again have SK0 and VK0. And VK0 consists of VK0 prime and so on. And now we start to see the connections. Before that, I will add a bit of a tree here. And we add SK10, VK10, and SK11, VK11, And this continues down to more tree structure. Okay, so this is roughly the idea of the tree of key material, including the signing keys and the verification keys. First of all, we see that this verification key here is the verification key of one level lower. This verification key is the verification key of that one level lower on the left side. So these are the actual verification keys of the children. And these two verification keys are signed here. And the verification key prime and the signing key SK prime, they are the actual signing key, the actual one-time signature signing key pair for the current node. We have something similar here. So here, the verification, the actual signing key of that node is VK1 prime. And the, no, this is the verification key, of course. And the signing key for that is the signing key that is used here for this signature. This is the for space reasons, I move this here. Actual key pair of node. So this is the technical key pair, the technical key pair that is used for signing. This is always this VK1 prime and the signing key prime for that too. And for the root, we had VK prime and SK prime and so on. So those are the things that technically sign stuff. Then we store the verification keys in the verification key, the technical verification keys of the children in the composed verification key. And this continues down to the leaf. So we now basically have a chain of signatures of each children, of all children verification keys that starts from the root and ends in a leaf. Basically, in the root, we sign the two verification keys of the children, and then each of these corresponding signing keys then signs again the verification keys of their children and so on and so forth, which goes from the root down to the leaf. Now, how do these things look more technical? The initial signing key SK prime is just a pseudorandom function key. The initial verification key is just what I described above. It consists of VK prime, VK zero prime, VK one prime, and the one time signature under signing key SK prime of the hash of VK zero prime and VK one prime. Then for an intermediate, verification key VKI, I still have my technical verification key VKI prime. Then I have VKI concatenated with 0 prime, VKI concatenated with 1 prime, and a one-time signature under SKI prime under the hash or with the hash of the two children keys VKI 0 prime and VKI 1 prime. Then this still looks like we have a huge set of signing keys and verification keys that need to be pre-computed, but this is actually not the case because we can compute all of that dynamically. So how do we do that? We derive our VKI prime as follows. This verification key I prime consists of, or starts with computing a signing key I prime, and this signing key consists of values x 10, x 11, to x l 0, x l 1. So this is just again a very normal Lamport signing key pair. This signing key consists of the input values of a one-way function, 2 times L elements of that. The verification key, just also as with normal Lamport signatures, is the one-way function applied to all of these values, x10, fx11, to f x l 0 and f x l 1. And all of these values, x j b, they are computed as the pseudorandom function output of the key that is the initial signing key, SK star, with the associated data of I, comma, J, comma, B. So, what do we see here? We see this tree of key material, and all of this key material is basically computed from the initial pseudorandom function key that is sampled for the signing key SK star. And we compute this by computing our input values to the one-way function with which we compute our Lamport signature key pairs using the pseudorandom function on input of this key. And then ijb, where I is the node or describes the node in the tree, j describes the element number in the signing key or verification key, and b is 0 or 1 for when we sign messages. We have, for each bit of a message that we want to sign, one element in our signing key and verification key. So these elements are derived deterministically from the key that we store in the initial signing key. Then these elements specify our signing keys. Our verification keys, our technical signing keys and verification keys, are just the one-way function applied to these input elements. And then For all nodes, we have these intermediate verification keys, and these verification keys just consist of the technical verification key of the current node and the two children verification keys of the current node plus a one-time signature of the technical signing key of the current node signing the hash of the two verification keys of the two children. So we now have a huge tree where the top verification key signs the two children, each of these two children signs their children down to the leaf. And then in the leaf, we have a signing key pair, signature key pair, with which we can actually sign the message that we want to sign. Questions? Yes, please.
Speaking of such a tree, do you need full evaluation of everything on every access?
No. Very good question. So what is, maybe let's give this question back to all of you. What do I need to store in my memory and what do I need to compute when I want to sign a message? There were two questions. You have to specify which of them you want to answer.
You have to compute all the paths on the path.
Exactly.
But you don't have to store all of them in memory.
So what do I need to store? First of all, this here is the root secret that I can use to compute everything in the entire tree. So as the secret key, I need to store nothing else than this key. Because from this key, I can compute all the elements for all the input elements for all the technical signing keys in the tree. From the signing keys, I can compute the verification keys. And from these technical verification keys and with these signing keys, I can compute the entire collection of this composition for every node. So in principle, I never need to store anything else as the signer than this symmetric key here. Fine. Okay, what needs to be stored in the verification key? The verification key only needs to store this verification key star. So this verification key suffices to verify everything that I want to verify as messages signed with this tree. So I just need to store in the verification key the technical verification key of this node, the two verification keys of the children, plus the one-time signature with this node's technical signing key of the hash value of these two verification keys. So three keys, one signature. Fine. Now, when I want to sign a message, I need to go in this tree down to the leaf of the hash value of that message. So let's write down how a signature looks like. A signature sigma consists of the signature of the hash value of M with leaf SKH of M, comma VKH of M all verification keys VKI on path from root to leaf h of m. And this includes all vk prime on the copath. And the copath is basically the neighbors of all nodes on the path. So when I want to sign a message, I have to go from the root down to the leaf of the message that I want to sign. And on that path, I have to derive all the key pairs. on that path. So if I have a message length of 128 bits, or I have a hash output of 265 bits, remember the collision-based attacks from early lectures, then I have to go down a tree of 265 levels. So I have to compute 265 key pairs. But whenever I have to compute something, I just use a pseudorandom function. So there is nothing super expensive involved here. Only computing pseudorandom functions. The only problematic part is that the signature is not small. It's 265 times the elements of all verification keys plus the signature. So 265 times 128 times 265. It's not small. But the nice part is this is post-quantum secure. So let's summarize a couple of those thoughts to have them written down. Each node, when reached, signs its two children adaptively as written down further above. The secret key contains a pseudorandom function key with which the entire tree can be reached. Or can be derived. The verification key star contains signature over actual verification keys of VK0 and VK1. And important to note, everything is deterministic. So the computation of signing keys, the computation of verification keys, the computation of signatures, all of that is just one-way function or pseudorandom function computations. Intuitively, signatures are of logarithmic size in the maximum number of signatures. Respectively, linearly in the length of messages that we want to sign, which means that signatures length, the signature length is in O of what I just wrote down doesn't make sense the way I wrote it down, but intuitively it makes sense. Signatures are logarithmic size, the maximum number of signatures. This is correct. And linearly in the in the length of messages, which overall makes signature length quadratic in the message size. So the idea is basically that we have a tree that allows for one leaf for every message that can be signed. And so the depth of that tree is the number of bits of messages that we want to sign. But then every signature consists of one element per message bit, which means that we first of all have to collect all the elements on the tree, and then each element in the tree has a signature that consists of as many elements as the message size, which then yields signatures that are quadratic in the message length. So, in summary, this is quadratic in the input / output length of the one-way function. So this sounds like a theoretic fun game, fun construction, not super practical, but this is the underlying concept of so-called Sphinx Plus, which was standardized as stateless hash-based digital signature algorithm. Which is SLHDSA. So there was this, or still is this, post-quantum NIST competition that looked at standardizing digital signature algorithms that are secure against quantum adversaries, and Sphinx Plus was chosen as one of the candidates for being standardized, and it has been standardized under the name Stateless Hash-Based Digital Signature Algorithm, SLHDSA. The original publication of Sphinx was by Bernstein et al. at Eurocrypt 2015. And this was the core of the information that I wanted to provide about the Lampert signature scheme and its extension for practice for making it not only one time useful. Are there any questions? Who has roughly an idea of how it works? Okay, to everybody else, can you come up with questions that can help you, supporting you? We still have like 5 minutes time to talk about that, and then I will talk about the initial start of RSA signatures. So use the time if you have, yeah, please. Yeah, this is the Lampert signature scheme. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. I should write that down somewhere. Where do I use it for the first time? Here. So the interesting part here is that this tree-based construction allows us to turn any one-time signature scheme into a stateless multi-use signature scheme. So it's not necessary to use Lampert for the one-time signature scheme, but Lampert suffices. And Lampert is the simple solution. But in principle, you could use any other one-time signature scheme in order to make it multi-time usage. So. Candidate for one-time sig Lampert. Good question. Any other questions? Also more fundamental or deeper or higher or simpler or whatever. No further questions. Great. Then what we've learned so far is our first signature scheme. And directly a signature scheme that has been standardized very recently and that is post-quantum secure. Of course, the actual standardization considers many, many more aspects, but the underlying idea is basically that we use one-time signatures in the sense of Lampert, and then we build a tree, and this tree allows us to dynamically derive keys in this tree from the root to the leaf. The leaf signing keys are the ones that actually sign the messages, and all the other nodes in the tree, they are only used for signing the two children, which themselves sign their children, and so on, such that at the end we have from the root to the leaf a chain of trust or a chain of signatures, such that knowing only the verification key in the root and then seeing a signature together with the verification keys on the path from the root to the signing leaf, we can verify this signature, and the signature is actually unforgeably secure under chosen message attacks, and actually with more than seeing only one signature. The signing key is small, it's just a pseudorandom function key, and that is it. Great. Then let's move to a quick dive. If you have questions, still ask, please. But we will move further to RSA signatures. Rivest, Shamir, and Edelman. In communications of the ACM in 1978. And you can take a look in the book on page 464 and in the PAR book on page 306. Okay. One thing that one of our PhD students always keeps emphasizing is that Ron Rivers, Adi Shamir, and Edelman, oh God. I don't know the first name of Edelman at the moment, but Rivers and Shamir, they are anyway the cryptographers. Edelman was the number theory person in the background, and Rivers and Shamir were the ones who developed the idea of RSA signatures and RSA public key encryption. And after they had an idea, they thought like, is this really secure? And so they went to Edelman, and Edelman looked at it and said like, yeah, looks secure. And since he didn't really contribute to coming up with a construction, Edelman said, I don't want to be the first author here. So typically, especially in cryptography, it's common to have alphabetic order of authors. But RSA is one of the examples where you see that it is this scheme is not used, because Edelman said, I don't want to be the first author here. And the other story that is probably worth mentioning is that Ron Rivers sometimes, but especially Adi Shamir, are people that you see still at conferences. So if you ever start a PhD in cryptography and your supervisor sends you to Santa Barbara to crypto, which is every year in August, then you will very likely see see Adi Shamir, or also Whitfield Diffie, or Martin Hellmann. So these people are still around, they still do research, or they just use these conferences to see other people in the crypto community. But yeah, these people are still alive, and they came up with the RSA signature scheme. And the variant of the RSA signature scheme that we consider here is the so-called full domain hash variant. RSAFDH. So the scheme begins, and this is the most complicated part, with the key generation. So the key generation starts with computing two primes. P and Q. Such that P and Q are different. And the typical way doing this in practice is via just sampling a random number and checking whether it is a prime. So we just basically sample numbers, and then we test via primality test whether it's a prime. Then we compute the product of the two, which we call capital N. Then we compute phi of N, which is Euler's phi function. Which is P minus 1 times Q minus 1. Then we compute, or we sample, an exponent e. And this exponent e is sampled from Z and star. Such that the greatest common divider of E and phi of n equals 1. So GCD here means greatest common divider and we compute D as the inverse of E mod phi of n. And we can compute both of these things. Via the extended Euclidean algorithm. We will go deeper into the notation here next week, but Z and prime is basically the set of all numbers from 1 to n, such that this here and such that this here holds, so the greatest common divider of E and phi of n equals 1. So the secret key is then n and d, and the verification key is n and e. Now, to sign a message with the secret key, I pass the secret key as n and d, and the signature is the hash value of the message raised to the power of d modulo n. Important to note here is that, so I said we talk about or we look at the full domain hash version of RSA, and the full domain hash version is basically just that this message is hashed. If we don't hash the message, then we basically have schoolbook RSA. Without this hash of the message, this is schoolbook RSA. So this is plain RSA. But if I have this hash before I raise it to the power of D, this thing is called full domain hash. Does anybody have an idea? I don't expect you to have an idea, but maybe some of you have an idea of why we hash the message first. So the answer is basically that it's insecure, but yeah. It's a size problem. It can be a size problem, absolutely, yes. But if we limit our signatures to the same output size as the hash function, it's still a problem. And it's actually a security problem. The problem is, if I have a message one and I sign it, and I have a message two and I sign it, then due to the computation modulo n, I have m time n m1 times m2 to the power of d, which means that if I have a signature for message one and I just want to have a signature for 2 times m, then I can just get a signature for 2 and m individually, and then from that I can compute a signature of 2 times m. This is problematic. Okay, quickly the verification algorithm. Again, I pass my verification key first, and then I check if h of m equals the signature sigma to the power of e mod n. Then I return 1. Otherwise, I return 0. And the correctness guarantee can be seen by checking that h of m to the d to the e is just h of m to the e times d. And if we then check how we computed d, d is the inverse of e, then we have that h of m to the e times d is the same as e times e minus 1. And since the Euler's phi function phi of n is the modulus that we compute in the exponent in such groups, e and its inverse cancel each other out, which means that this is just the same as h of m. And the first component here was sigma to the e. And so we're happy. And this was a bit sketchy. We will talk about RSA signatures in more depth, and also a sketch for the security proof in next week's lecture. Do you have any final questions? If not, I am thankful for your attention, and we see each other next week.